Hello, how are you tonight? Continuing to discuss the power of now. So I'm hoping that everything has been going well with you and that we are indeed getting more and more conscious of the power of now. So let's talk about the power of now and what does it mean. We've been working on Eckhart Tolle's Power of Now book for quite some time. There's a lot of deep stuff that's there. But let me introduce myself. I am Hajra Rahim, Reverend Hajra Rahim of the One Love Center in Brooklyn. Rodney Gittins is our co-spiritual director. We meet every first and third Sundays at 1:30 at the Village of Gray J Gallery, 886 Pacific Street in Brooklyn, New York. And that is what we do. We also have classes, and we do monthly newsletters, well, weekly newsletters. And if you want to be on our mailing list, you can call in or you can write us, contact us at onelove@onelovecenter.org. That's onelove@onelovecenter.org. And we'd be more than happy to connect with you. So right now, we have been talking about One Love Center's radio show, which is Blog Talk Radio, which you know. And we have been discussing the power of now. And so this is a pretty deep book. It's high spiritual work. And what we need to remember is that we are all a part of the high spiritual work. And as part of that, we also know that that is the only true thing that is possible in this world is high spiritual work. Because as we learn this, we also learn that we are one in consciousness and that consciousness is what indeed transforms the world, because everything is consciousness. And we'll get into this a little bit later as we go through the show. But what we know is that life is based on consciousness. Our particular experience of life is based on our consciousness. And we know that we can also see that people can look at the same thing and have totally different consciousness or reactions to it on what they have been talking about or how they are perceiving it. And so as we continue to look at this, we will continue to understand that we have indeed come with this. We have a call on the line, and this is Rodney. Rodney, if you're there, you want to say hello? Hello?
Well, hey, greetings, everybody. This is Rodney calling from sunny, humid, hot Tampa, Florida.
Oh, wow. You have to rub it in, right?
Well, no, I'm not rubbing it in. I'm just saying that the present weather condition. But it looks like it's going to rain. But I'm here, you know, and I won't be on long, or I'll be in intermittently as I'm moving around.
Okay.
So I'm not in a great space right now. But anyway, I'm glad to be on for a moment and glad to hear your voice. And thank you so much for taking the lead and leading all of us in The Power of Now, Chapter 9.
Chapter 9. And hopefully what we intend to do is finish up with Chapter 9 this week. But it's pretty dense. It's a lot of juicy stuff here in Chapter 9. So.
Well, we got through a lot of it already.
Yeah. Well, this last section I'm talking about, in particular about the last 10 pages,
right.
Is talking about using and releasing, relinquishing negativity. And, you know, we live in a very negativity-based world, which is an ego-based world right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole push with Eckhart Tolle and all of the spiritual teachers is for that transformation of from thinking of the negative into looking at the positive, looking at the truth of our being, and that we create our own conditions. And so we create the negative by focusing on the negative, and we can just as well create more positive and more pleasing situations by focusing on those desirable aspects that we would like to see. One of the things you said is you cannot create positiveness out of a negative situation. You have to move it to a higher consciousness, which is what Albert Einstein said. You cannot solve the problem at the level of the problem. You have to rise above. So we have to rise above our negativity in order to create the heaven on earth that we all desire to have. So he talks a lot here about negativity. And he's saying on page 156, all inner resistance is experienced as negativity in one form or another, and all negativity is resistance. What we're resisting is what is. You know, we have to look at a situation and know that it's something that's not necessarily desirable, but not to resist it means to accept it as it is, and then move our consciousness to knowing that it doesn't have to be that way. We can evolve it, or we can rise above that into a higher level. We can choose the high road. And in choosing a high road, then we transform that situation from a negative into a positive. And so he says, in context, resistance and negativity are almost synonymous. Negativity ranges from irritation or impatience to fierce anger, from a depressed mood or sullen resentment to suicidal despair. Sometimes the resistance triggers the emotional pain body, in which case even a minor irritation may produce intense negativity, such as anger, depression, or grief. And I know we have witnessed that some innocent thing that somebody does can produce an overreaction to somebody else, from somebody else, and it's just like, well, they didn't do all that, but it was a trigger, whatever it was, that triggered it. It triggered that resistance. It triggered that negativity that person was holding in their pain body, and they just let it all out and unleashed it on what we would call an innocent person, because the person was not responsible for that grief or that resistance that person was holding inside of them. They were holding on to it and more than likely didn't know how to release it, to let it go. To me, it's just like having a sore or a boil on your body. It's full of negative, undesirable material that your body's trying to get rid of. And then we have to go to the doctor, hopefully, to have them lance it so that negative material, that yuckiness, can come out. And they'll clean it out, dress it up, put stuff on it to heal that part of the body. But if we don't take care of that boil, it'll continue to hurt and it'll burst on the inside. And then we'll have more and more unhappiness because our health then would be affected by it. That's on the physical level, and it's the same thing on the spiritual level. Rodney, do you have anything to add to that?
Well,
Rodney, are you there?
Yeah, I actually have, I think, a lot to add to that, except that I'm not in a great place right now to belong.
Okay.
But, yeah, you know, that's where I love science of mind, religious science, because it gets us to check into our thinking. Now, you know, the main thing is we have to be pointed in the direction to want to look at our thinking.
Right.
So that we can realize if it's negative, and I'm calling, you know, it's like I know what's positive. And so all of a sudden, if it doesn't seem life-affirming, it doesn't seem like it's helping myself or anybody else, that certainly would be negative.
Right.
And I think everything else comes after that. You know, the negative thinking, the fear, the doubt, you know, and all of that. And I think Eckhart Tolle talks more about that. It's like a self-replicating disease in a way, you know. It's like dis-ease breeds more dis-ease, you know, and more negativity breeds more negativity, you know. It's just a very, it's like this tight cycle that we really need to free ourselves up from. And it's like a merry-go, one of those fast merry-go-rounds. And how do you get off? You know, it's like you try to stop, but it's not going to stop, you know.
Yeah.
You got to jump off.
You have to jump off at some point. We have another caller on the line.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to welcome our next caller. And who is calling? Hello, are you there? Okay, they hung up. I'm sorry, it took too long to answer it.
They can call back. It's okay.
Okay.
And, you know, some people want to call and listen, and that's okay, too. I'm going to be on mute for a while, and I'll stick when I'm in a better area.
Okay. All righty.
Okay.
Well, I'll continue. Okay, so it continues on to say about the ego, and this is what we're talking about, the ego, is where we live on the external, as opposed to spiritual, where we live from the internal. And say the ego believes that through negativity, it can manipulate reality and get what it wants. It believes that through it, it can attract a desirable condition or dissolve an undesirable one. So we have seen people try to be one way or the other. We've seen people who've tried to force folks to change and be different, and that does not work. Cannot attract negative, positive conditions or desirable conditions by pounding on the undesirable ones or the negative ones. We talk about encouragement for children. Is the best way to raise children who want to do things. Being negative with kids would only inspire resistance and more negativity, but they thrive on encouragement. So it's like the sign that says, don't walk, then what am I supposed to do? It needs to say, walk, you know, rather than don't walk or don't run. It needs to say, walk. Tell people what you want to happen, not what you don't want to happen. Tell kids what you want them to do, not what you don't want them to do, and then they can proceed to follow those directions. It says the universe does not understand or know. It only hears the action word. And so if you tell a kid, don't run, all they hear is the action word, run. If you tell a child to walk, then they hear the action word, walk. So just that little twist of telling people what you want rather than what you don't want will produce a better situation, less negativity, and more of the desirable situation that you would want. He's also talking about A Course in Miracles. Now, I have really never studied A Course in Miracles. I've heard a lot about it. That's one of the things on my agenda of things to do. But he talks about A Course in Miracles. He said, rightly points out that whenever you are unhappy, there is an unconscious belief that the happiness buys you what you want. If you, meaning the mind, does not believe that unhappiness works, then why would you create it? The fact is, of course, that negativity does not work. instead of attracting the desirable condition, it stops it from arising. Instead of dissolving an undesirable one, it keeps it in place. And the only useful function is that it strengthens the ego, and that's why the ego loves it. And we talk about people and their egos. When you identify so much with your ego that, you know, any type of seemingly disrespect of your ego, folks can't handle that, and they have to some kind of way resist it and fight it back and beat the other person down. The person who is very aggressive in defending their ego has very little self-esteem. And the person who is more humble and meek, so to speak, is the person who has the highest self-esteem, because they know that whatever you're saying or whatever you're doing, it's not about me, it's about you and your perception of me. And your perception is just what that is. It belongs to you. It does not belong to me. And they're able to disassociate themselves because they know that the ego is speaking and not the truth of who they are, which is one of the things that Science of Mind teaches us so well, that the truth of who we are is our spiritual essence. It is not the physical body, because the physical goes and comes and goes and comes. And Eckhart Tolle will get into that a little bit later on. It says, once you have identified with some form of negativity, you do not want to let it go. And on a deep conscious, unconscious level, you do not want the positive change. So even though people can say they want a positive change, a lot of times they really don't, because it threatens who they are now. And they're left with, well, what am I going to do? It's like, what is it that you really, really, truly, truly want? And look at that. If I had what I really, truly, truly wanted, would I be happy? What would I do? How would that work? It's amazing how this thing holds true in different situations, that we now have to do what we said we want to do. And are we really being true to ourselves, or are we just giving ourselves a bill of goods to make ourselves feel good, think good, look good in front of other people, but do we really, really want to do that? Because a lot of times it brings about a change in how we live and how we look at the world, our friends and things like that, and how we perceive ourselves. So it says it would threaten your identity as a depressed, angry, or hard-done-by person. You will then ignore, deny, or sabotage the positive in your life. This is a very common phenomenon. It is also insane. And I know you know, because I know people who say they want one thing, but when it's brought to them, they deny it. They say, oh, no, I can't do this, I can't do that. Even though they may want to or say they want to, they really don't. They just want to complain. And I have in my life some chronic complainers. That's all they do is complain. And when I try to say something on the positive side or look, bring them into a more conscious level of the complaint, they get upset with me. And I'm like, okay, so I just kind of leave it alone. I'll say just a little something, because I don't want to get caught up into the argument about their negativity either. So I just say what I say, and I leave it alone, so that I don't get drawn into their negativity. And hopefully the little I do say will help to give them another way of looking at it. He also goes on to say that negativity is totally unnatural. It is a psychic pollutant, and there's a deep link between poisoning and the destruction of nature and the vast negativity that has accumulated in the collective human psyche. Now, that, I think, is so true, because if we look at how we, as a society, with all the negative stuff that's going on and the condition of the world, we'll see that there's a high correlation between the two. Because if you're thinking clean, you're going to want cleanliness around you. If you have negative thinking, then you're going to have negative stuff going on in your environment. And sometimes you may not even see it. I mean, you're so into your negativity that the negative stuff that's happening in your environment looks perfectly normal to you. I've known people who have who complain a lot that their living situation is just a mess. They have stuff all over the place. They don't clean it up, and it correlates really well with their negative thoughts. So I just look at that when he's saying that it correlates with the collective human psyche. So look at your environment and see how clean is it? How do you feel about being where you are? And if you don't feel good about it, clean it up and see how that will impact your own thinking and impact the negativity that we all have around us. He goes on to say, no other life form on the planet knows negativity, only humans. No other life form on the planet knows negativity, only humans. I think this is why people love their pets, because pets don't give you any negativity. They just love you, especially cats. Well, not necessarily cats. Cats do love you, but dogs, I think, are the ones that show it mostly. And people just love their dogs. I mean, you come home, and the dog is just full of love, and his tail is wagging, and it just wants to be petted and kisses and all this good stuff. And animals don't know negativity, and plants don't know negativity, but they respond well to love. We have a call on the line. Do you want to say hello?
Hello?
Yes. You want to introduce yourself? Yes. Can you hear
this
me?
I hear you just fine.
Oh, great.
This is Reverend Watt out in San Francisco.
Fantastic. I'm so glad that you're joining us tonight.
Yeah, I try to do it every week, but some efforts are great. I have more success than others.
Yeah, I understand that. That's the life of a minister. Yes, it is. But wonderful. Rodney's here about. He's down in Florida at a class, so he's in and out. Okay?
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So we're talking about the negativity and relinquishing that from our psyche or from our unconscious
mm-hmm.
level and stuff so that we can live and have a more peaceful world. Is there anything you want to say?
Well, you know, I can always say something.
Yes, that's so true.
The first thing comes to my mind, you know, we always talk about eliminating the negative. And I think one of the things that stands out to me, and I've read a lot of great inspired writers, and certainly Eckhart Tolle is one of my favorite great, you know, writers on spirituality. One of the things I would add to the conversation that I've had with all of these writers is that every construct we have is born in duality simply because this three-dimensional system that we've created is so pervasive, it's very, very difficult to come up with an idea that's not steeped in it. It's almost
right.
like we're in a box, and the box has instructions on how to get out of the box, but the instructions are written outside of the box. And so, you know, and if you're outside the box reading the instructions, then you don't need to read the instructions. And so it's kind of a, I don't know how to describe it any differently than that. And the reason
mm-hmm.
why I say that is because all of the conversations about ego and negativity, the way we like to do it in mysticism schools, spirituality, we love to talk about the ego and negativity and duality and all that stuff, and I do it too. But all we've really done is redefined the devil from a more traditional system. Now it's not the devil that's trying to make you do all these things. The ego is doing all these bad things to you. Well, it's not the ego so much as doing all these bad things. It's just you're in a system of duality. And duality, the belief in duality is doing it. And while I agree and I support all these things, I would say that the thing we call the negative is a contrast of the positive. It's the background of the foreground, and it helps to form that which we desire. It's like it's the void from which all things emerge. And so I don't know if I'm making myself clear. What I'm trying to say is that the thing that we're calling the negative only exists because there's something called the positive. And so when we go to a place in consciousness where there's neither one of those two things, then You know, and when I say neither one of those two things, you know, in magnetism, there's a polarity of negative and positive. In electronics, they go to the negative and the positive charge. And they have this thing that creates polarity when you have the negative and the positive operating in concert in one another. When all the molecules line up in one direction, in a magnet, you have a north pole and a south pole, and they act in unison together to help draw other ferrous metals to the magnet because you've aligned from negative to positive, positive to negative, all the molecules. The point I'm trying to get to in a long-about way is when you view life from a place of wholeness, and when I say wholeness, it includes all the good and all the quote-unquote good and bad, all the quote-unquote negative and the positive, all the, you know, up and downs and the ins and outs, and realize that it's all part of the same substance. And you realize that the I think I heard it called the law of it's kind of like the law of opposites, and it kind of goes like this. You know, if that which is not, if that which I heard the guy that does the conversations with God, Neil Donald Walsh, do this once at Revelation. It was brilliant. He says, when that which is not isn't, then that which is isn't either.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a while to get that. When that which is not isn't, then that which is indeed the meaning. When the thing that you say you don't desire, or when the opposite of that thing is not present, then the thing that you want is also not going to be present, because in order for the light to form, it must come out of the darkness. In order for the foreground to emerge, it comes out of the background. Everything is related to everything else, and so the trick is, the trick is not to deny appearances of the ego or everything the ego says. Recognize the ego just wants one thing, and that's to get the needs met of the spiritual being, but it's out of control. It needs balance. And everything in our life is about balance and harmony. And so rather than run from the ego or hide from negativity or all of these things, my goal and what I do for my spiritual discipline is just to call everything one. You know, one with the divine, one with the infinite, one with God. Just call it all the divinity, the absolute, the God. Call it love. Call it whatever you want. But it all, everything makes up that one thing. And my good is contained in that one thing. And when I can affirm my good in the midst and the presence of all things, then I experience that good because I'm calling it forth from the deepest parts of myself. The part that we're calling the negative right now, the darkness, the shadow, or even, it's the problem we have with it is because we've been steeped in such a system of duality, we polarize the light and the darkness to the point where we have something called day and night, and we operate in a concept called day and night. But really, you know, it's a quote-unquote 24-hour system where day and night is particularly one day. And when I say tomorrow, we know that there's a night that comes along with it, but we talk about the day as if that's the only good part of the night is something else. And the night helps form the day and makes it what it is all I'm saying. And everything in your life is helping you to reach into yourself and pull out there what you desire. The not part you're talking about, the universe doesn't hear the not. The
right.
Not is like the not to me is the what the commitment in what's the 11 laws of God. You're familiar with those, right?
Right, uh-huh.
Where there's this one that says, it's like law 9 or 10, something to the effect that it doesn't matter what you ask for, but it's more important who is doing the asking. And
right.
So when you accept the fact that the person who's doing the asking is not separate from that which is being asked about or asked of, and that, you know, everything is there supporting that cosmic vibration, I guess I'm getting way in the deep end of the pool here, then I see how, you know, and I think it's important to note that everything supports me. The things that look like they're against me are only there to help me focus on what I want. Every time I see the appearance of what I don't want, it's not enough. I think the problem is, instead of saying, no, I don't want that, shift my focus and just say, I do want this. I do accept this. You keep all your focus on that which you desire because you want all your energy going into that which you desire. And in order to
right.
say, I don't want something, I have to conjure up the image of that thing and say, well, I don't want that. And so
right.
I'm like, it's like I have a pencil and I keep drawing the wrong image saying, okay, I'm going to draw a red wagon. No, not that. I want a blue wagon. I'm going to draw a red wagon. No, not that. I'm going to draw a blue wagon. And so it's almost like you're caught in a loop to me when you're trying to work from the denial aspect, and I think it's important. And that's why whenever I do affirmations of denial, I always add three positive affirmations. So my balance of negative to positive is 3-1, because I want to have three times as much of what I say I want as opposed to what I say I don't want. And I try not to talk about what I don't want, but only what I do want. And finally, to sum this whole thing up, good God, I'm tired of talking. is that, you know, the focus there is for me to affirm what I want. And every time my mind shifts from what I want, affirm what I want. And so, you know, I kind of back off, you know, the whole idea about the negative and the positive. I think it's basics. I think it's basic spirituality 101. I think is important for people to know it. And I teach it myself. And, you know, I always like to include it, but there are times when the negative is what has the most potential, what has the most power. And so if that's where your belief system is at the time, then you use that as a tool to create what you want. And so, you know, if you're really afraid of something, if something's really got your attention in a negative way, sometimes it's important to deny that it has power over you. And there's certainly nothing spiritually incorrect about that. However, what I would add, or also what I would add, is that whenever we are making that denial so that we, you know, because we have our own sense of inadequacy in the moment, affirm what the truth is stronger than I affirm what's not the truth. And you can actually use, you know, a denial in a positive way that way. And it doesn't become a thing that's, you know, we're just coming up with a new kind of sin. We call it denial or duality or darkness or ego. And that's what I have to say about that.
And I totally agree with what you just said. And I like to reframe the word negative into what's desirable or undesirable. It doesn't necessarily have to be negative for it to be something that's undesirable. For instance, I don't like strawberry ice cream. It is not desirable for me. Strawberry ice cream is very, very desirable for other people. And so I would like to call it desirable and undesirable because that's more personal than a negative emotion to me. But on page 158, he goes on to say, couldn't a negative emotion also contain an important message? And the answer to that is yes. Recurring negative emotions sometimes contain a message, as do illnesses. But any change that you make, whether they have to do with your work, your relationships, your surroundings, are ultimately only cosmetic unless they arise out of a change in your level of consciousness. Is what you're saying. And as far as concerned, it only means one thing, being more present. When you have reached a certain degree of presence, you don't need negativity anymore to tell you what is needed in your life situation. But as long as negativity is there, use it. It's a kind of signal that reminds you to be more present.
Well, it's interesting how he says you get to a place where you don't need negativity anymore. I imagine there may be such a creature. I'm still looking forward to seeing my first unicorn. So, you know, I can't say such a creature doesn't exist. All I can say is I've yet to meet one, at least not consciously. And I think the thing to realize when you say you get to a place where, how does he say you get to a place where what?
What he says, when you have reached a certain degree of presence, you do not need negativity anymore to tell you what is needed in your life situation.
Right. And I can't say that's not true. All I can say is I haven't reached that level of presence. Now, what I can say, though, is that I've reached a level of awareness, or I guess presence, that when I appear to be experiencing what seems to be negative, and I say it that way because I'm at the place where I can't call it negative because that means something bad is happening. And what I have found is that the most powerful and transformative moments that I've been in have been moments when it looked like something bad was happening to me. And so it's because I stayed present during those times that I grew or developed, you know, the way that, you know, the ways that I have. And so if that keeps happening to you over and over again, then it's hard to say that what you're going through are negative experiences. And so now when I'm going through what seems like a negative experience, I realize I have an expression that goes, when it looks like things are falling apart, they're really falling together. And so when I see all hell breaking loose, I know heaven is dawning in that same moment. And so I actually get a little excited about it. I get actually a small smirk will come over my face because I'm like, oh, this looks like something that it's not. This is me, you know, judging my good as a curse, and I'm not choose, and I choose to see it for what it really is, a blessing for me. And it keeps me calm and relaxed and in a good state of mind during the worst circumstances. And, you know, it works. And so I think maybe he's talking about that when he says, well, you get to the place where you don't need it anymore. I don't need to call it a negative experience, that's for sure. You know, I don't need to label it as something bad. I've been paying attention long enough at this point in my life that the very appearance, I remember I was having a situation with a young man 30 years my junior, and he was very upset with me, and he was speaking very aggressively, and he talked aggressively enough that it made me, on a physical level, a bit alarmed for my safety and what he may, you know, do to me physically. And at the same time that I was having that thought, I was also aware that the same God that I am and is the same energy that's operating in and through and as him, and that I'm not separate from him and he's not separate from me, so who am I really having a discussion with? Who am I having this argument with? Somebody over there or something inside of me? And so that idea, you know, intrigued me. I said, there you go again, trying to turn a negative, you know, here we go, call it a negative, trying to make something that's here to serve me into something that is a bane to me in some way. And so as I was having that thought, that little smile comes on my face. Now the young man's even more so because he thinks I'm laughing at him. He's like, wipe the smile off your face, or I have to wipe it off for you. And I'm like, well, son, you may have to wipe the smile off my face, because when I come to this level of awareness, the smile that erupts from the depth of who I am as I recognize myself the way I was recognizing myself with that young man is irrepressible. And I have to, and it's something that's just coming up. And so, you know, I just stood there in my space and held my energy, because I knew the person who was threatening me didn't even exist, you know.
Right.
So, except in my own, you know, own consciousness and as a result thereof. So go to the cause, which is my consciousness, and fix that instead of the effect, which is what looks like somebody in my face. And I guess, I don't know if this is making any sense. I'm trying to explain it, you know, well, walking through the house, doing housework the best I can.
Can you guys hear me? It makes sense to me.
Yes,
hey,
I can hear you.
Rodney's here. Fancy meeting you here, dude.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much. I'm loving the conversation. And I just want to jump in really quickly, and I love this because I'm identifying and agreeing with the both of you about a situation that doesn't have to be called negative, or I like using that word undesirable as well. And I have a really current example of a situation that in the midst of it, it was bringing up the negative connotation. You know, I was like, not good. You know, I was affirming, no, this can't be happening. It was like almost all day. It was like I almost died. I was making wrong turns. Me, of all people, ego was alive and well. It was like I was missing my exit. So I was like, oh, my goodness. And, you know, getting on the plane was fine. You know, the flight was fine. Getting off the flight was fine. You know, getting to my hotel, I got lost. And, I'm okay with that. It's, you know, I'm pretty much good company with myself. But what happened was I was right next to the hotel but couldn't see the hotel, and I drove another half hour and then came back, and, you know, eventually, you know, I saw the hotel. And when I get into the hotel, the first room had bugs going around. And so I went into no, you know, it was like a deep, sincere no, negative, you know, negative. This is not possible. It's not happening. And so they gave me another room, which was the room of a smoker. Like they had just left. It was really strong. Okay, here's another negative. Here's another no. And it was negative, not like it's a bad thing, but just negative, like, okay, this is going to point me in a different direction. You know, like a signpost, like Eckhart Tolle says. It's like, okay, I know that I would not be a happy camper in either of those rooms. So they kicked me in another room, and it had flies in it. I was like, all right, I was starting to take it personal on myself. Like, what am I doing to attract three rooms, you know, that are unacceptable? And I was really feeling down and kind of depressed and very negative. I had negative thoughts. It was like that were not positive or that were, you know, I had a physical feeling based on my thoughts. The thoughts were not, you know, wonderful, happy, healing, you know, thoughts, positive thoughts. It was like, woe is me, and then, you know, and now I got to go find another hotel, and it was all kind of grumpy feeling thoughts. And I was able to switch that around. You know, I was like, okay, well, this is going to lead to something better. So I had a tour of Tampa, driving around, looking for this other hotel. And the hotel room I'm in now was wonderful. You know, the person came, they heard that I had a bad experience, you know, in quotes. You know, it was certainly undesirable. And they took me to the room, they checked out the room. It was like, hey, it was great. I got great service, you know. And I think that what Eckhart Tolle is saying, and I like the way that we're kind of doing the slant on it, is like, hey, you know, it doesn't mean bad. It just means, hey, you know, now I know what it is that I like in my life, like Hodger was talking about. You know, I don't like strawberries. You know, I don't want strawberry ice cream or whatever it is. But I know what I do like. You know, but if I was to entertain stuff that I don't like, I'm going to start, you know, having a negative outlook. You know, I'm going to start not being happy with myself first and foremost. You know, then anything after that is not going to be rosy either, you know. So, you know, that experience of the hotel rooms, it wasn't a negative experience. I experienced things that were undesirable for me. And my subsequent actions did not allow it to be a negative experience. So that's just what I wanted to add to this.
Yes.
When I hear that story, what comes up for me is that this is a question of, and there's a scripture in the Bible where Jesus heals a man, vision. And I think he puts mud on his hands. He reached down with the dirt and spits on his hands. And then he asked the man, you know, can you see? What do you see? And the man says, I see men walking as trees. And so then Jesus gets more mud, you know, and spits and makes it and puts it on his eyes. He says, what do you see now? And he says, oh, I can see. And he says, you know, go and tell no one. I think the way, of course, you know, the guy is going to tell somebody. So some people are going to want to know, how can you see when you never could see before? And so,
right.
But the point that I'm making is one of the things I've played with, and I've talked to different spiritual discussions, I've had this idea of men walking as trees, and it's like maybe the guy was taking a look at the circulatory system with all the veins and branches that branch off, you know, or the nervous system where it might look like a tree, but his vision was not perfected for the three-dimensional. Do you understand what I'm saying? When we're looking for something that we don't know where it is, for example, keys are a perfect example of this, just when it's time to go, and we get out of phase. When I say out of phase, it's like the thing you're looking for is right where you are, but you can't see it. And this thing, as a friend of mine told me, this is so pervasive with her that she will be looking in a drawer where she knows it is, can't see it. Tell the sister, would you please look in this drawer because I've looked three times and I can't see it. And the woman will look in there and there it is sitting right there. Sometimes your consciousness is not completely present in the three-dimensional, and you have to refocus to get yourself fully present. And the reason why I'm saying that is because when I hear you telling the story about the two different or three different hotel rooms that were, quote-unquote, not to your liking, it was really you finally winding up where you are was you fine-tuning. You could have, you wanted to go, or you wanted to go to that place where the, quote-unquote, negativa lives and talk about, you know, they must be racist or, you know, they don't like brothers with locks or, you know, whatever, we come up with what they're doing to me and why they're doing it. Instead of going there with that energy, you stay focused, you know, like the quarterback looking for his men to break downfield, you know, or, you know, you knew he was going to break at the timing pattern. You just throw the ball where you're supposed to be at, and you knew you had a room. And so you're like, no, I have a room that doesn't have this, doesn't have that, and doesn't have that. Why do I know that? Because my room has X, Y, Z.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, you know, that's what the Bible calls waiting on the Lord. You know, you just didn't accept what was less than what you asked for, which you demanded in consciousness. You didn't say, okay, this'll do. Be the this'll do twins, you know what I mean? You said no, 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 and you stayed firm, and then you manifested that which you set out to manifest. So I guess I call that fine-tuning, focusing, and anyway, I pretty much agree with everything. Go ahead.
Well, I got to tell you, that's exactly what my talk was about, too, on this past Sunday. It was positive expectancy. You know,
yes.
It's like we can accept, you know, okay, we can accept good, you know, but we can also accept, you know, and it really
we can
was
also accept what?
The best.
Yes.
Expect the best.
Yes. Yes, we
you
can.
Know, if I had accepted anything less than what, like you said, what I felt was right and perfect for me, you know, I created, I would have named and labeled a negative experience, a negative situation. You know, but it wasn't. It was just like, hey, you know, I walked into something that wasn't to my liking. And I think if I stayed in it, that would have been, you know, I could have probably claimed that as negative.
Absolutely. If you'd have taken the route of a victim and said, this is what's being done to me, for whatever reason, you would say it's being done to you, you know, and, you know, we've got that as is done unto us as we believe, but nobody wants to hear that, you know. What's Sweet Brown say? Ain't nobody got time for that, you know. And so, you know, you stay present, you know, and that's what's required of us. We have to stay present. And that's really the bottom line with consciousness work is this, you know, if you do haphazard and sporadic practice, you get haphazard and sporadic results. But there was something in you that knew, I'm not going to sleep in this room. I don't know where I'm going to sleep, but it's not going to be here because the vibration that is Rodney Gittins and the vibration in that room did not match. And you say, yeah, well, it matched better than the cold, hard concrete outside. And that's true. And had it been the coldest night of the year, you might have decided this room was a bit more harmonious than it appeared at that particular time because your consciousness would be in a different space. You know, you have to really know who you are in a situation like that. And I had one similar with a hotel, and I remember I saw Mark Victor Hansen at First Church in Oakland. It's Oakland Center now. And he told the story about how they didn't, his room, the hotel oversold, and they told him he didn't have a room. And how he was like, oh, no, I know you have my room because I called ahead. And he started talking about how he got the presidential suite, you know, because they messed up his reservation. Well, I was listening to the story. First of all, A, I didn't even know at the time there was something called the presidential suite. And B, I didn't know that it was available, you know, oftentimes because most people can't afford it. And if they mess up, they have the option of putting you there. But when I heard his story, I thought to myself, man, if that could only happen to me, then I'd really know, you know, I'd really know that God is real. That would be the miracle. The only miracle I need, God, is that right there. Of course, we always say that. And sure enough, the next time we had convention, we went through a travel agency, but for some reason, Spirit told me to call ahead and talk to the hotel myself instead of going through the travel agency, and I did. And so when we got there, the hotel was overbooked, the travel agency had oversold, and they're rerouting people out of the hotel of the convention to another hotel nearby. And when it was my turn, they started talking about rerouting me, saying they didn't have a room. But I knew they must have my room because I also knew they had a presidential suite. So now I'm like, no. And they tried to blame it on my travel company. Well, you know, when you went to the travel agency screwed up. I said, I called the hotel personally. I didn't use the travel agency. You told me I had a room. I got on an airplane and flew all the way here to get in the room that you say I have. And now you're telling me you don't have a room, but I know you must have a room for me because I have a contract for a room, and I'm not going to another hotel. So she had to go get the manager, and the manager was mad, but I wound up with a presidential suite.
Here you go.
For the regular price. And it was kind of like the party didn't want this room, you know. And but, you know, and it requires, you know, in order to do, like, you know, there has to be something in you that knows, that will not waver. And there's something in you, Ronnie, that knows you're not in a room. The room you're in is smoke-free, bug-free, and whatever else free that it was the problem.
That's right.
You know, and that's a conviction that's unwavering in you. And so, you know, how do we build that unwavering conviction that we can stand in the pocket and proclaim our word with that kind of authority and watch it manifest itself? That's,
exactly.
That's the conversation.
As he continues to say, as long as negativity is there, use it. Use it
yes.
as a signal that reminds
Absolutely.
You to be more present. And I would like
yes.
for you guys to talk about what does he mean, because he keeps talking about being more present, and you mentioned that also, Mwata. So expand on that for our listeners. What does it mean when you say to be more present, when you say you're present? What does that mean?
That's a heck of a question. Okay. Heck of a question. Well, I'm going to have to stop cleaning now and sit down for a minute and be present with the question about
and because we're talking about the now, you know, the now moment, I don't want to use present to define itself. However, in the current moment is to be aware. It's to be aware of our thinking, our actions, our behavior, and our reactions, as well as our responses. But I think, and using the word being present, it's more like, as opposed to not being in the past. You know, it's allowing ourselves to not have a hold on what has already happened, because, and an example is, with that hotel experience, with Reverend Mwata, when we were in Vancouver, and I had gotten there a day early, and I almost slept in my rental car overnight because of a very similar experience. So that came up for that moment when I was in that room and I saw bugs moving around. I was not present. I was not in the present moment. My thoughts were in the past about that experience. And it took me a little while, but I got it together in Vancouver, and I did get a better hotel. That past experience actually, you know, was a signpost. That so-called faith experience allowed me to be in the present moment, in the now moment, and say, okay, yeah, I'm not going to bring that up and allow that experience to be a current experience again. No, now that's a signpost towards, you know, hey, focusing on what I do desire in this now moment, in the present moment. And that word present And I like to look at all the different variations of it, whether it's presentation or I don't even know if preside is part of present. I kind of feel that it is, like president and present. Like I don't know the relationship between the two. And then
I think they probably come from a different root, but I understand what you're saying.
Right. But I feel that it's something that we are currently allowing to stay focused on each moment. That's what present is for me.
Okay. Mawata, do you have your thought together yet?
Yes. For me, when I say to be present, I want to look up this one little thing right here just because I think it's too good. One of the things I've been playing with a lot lately is from the Egyptian, 11 laws of God, the Mediterranean, the seven minds. And one of the things that they talk about that's really critical to what we believe as New Thought religious scientists. Law 7, the law of Het Heru, is not what you imagine. It is who is imagining. Are you a human or a divine being? And law 8, law of Sebek, is not what you think or what you affirm. It is who is thinking and affirming. Are you a human or a divine being? The ninth law of Aset, prepare to sacrifice everything to become a vessel of God on earth, and you will in turn receive everything. When I talk about being present, it incorporates those three, in as much as what I'm being present in is the idea that I'm a divine being and not separate from my good. And so if it looks like I'm separate from my good, it means I'm out of phase right now. I'm not present in this particular space and time. I haven't brought the wholeness of my being into this space and time. And so my goal is to be still inside and focus on my breathing and affirm the truth of who I am. And in turn, I'm affirming the truth about every situation that I encounter. Being present requires an intimate knowledge of who you are and an innate and irrepressible desire to always return to that place, like lemmings run to the return of the sea, salmon, spawn, return to their spawning pool. The swallows fly south, the butterflies migrate. You know, all these things that cause animals to do what they do, the instinct to do a particular thing. The spider spins his web. I'm developing an instinct to return to a place where I am steeped in the idea that I'm one with the divine. That is my present. That's the presence that I want to be at all times. That's the presence that I believe I am at all times. The difference is, usually, I'm not aware of that truth about myself, and so, or at least I'm not focused on it, and so then it looks like things are happening, because it looks like things are falling apart, but it's really a call for me to come back to myself and know the truth of myself, and, I can keep going over and over again, but hopefully you got what I'm saying.
Well, yes, that is what I was talking about. I just wanted to make sure that the audience understood when we refer to the word presence, because we've used it continuously and not necessarily understanding what it means, being here now, but
yeah.
Now to what? Now to who you truly are, that you are that divine being and you create by your word. And when we are present and understand that that's the truth of our being and we are creating the situation, then we can create and recreate what we would desire. And if we have created something we don't desire, then we can recreate what we would desire. We can dissolve that and create something else. It's just like changing your clothes. You know, if you're present enough to know that you have something on that doesn't fit or you don't like to wear, you can go and take those things off and put something else on that's more pleasing to you. So the whole thing about being present is being present to yourself as a divine being, that we have the power to create and to recreate our world. And when we experience these undesirable situations, it just keeps pointing us to become more and more clear on what is it that I do want to experience. Well, I experienced that. I don't like that. I don't like strawberry ice cream. I think I'll try vanilla, or I think I'll try chocolate. I think I'll try Baskin-Robbins has 31 flavors. Go through all the flavors and find out which one I want or which combination of flavors I want. That's what, to me, being present is. Being present to the negative because, or the undesirable, because it tells us that we don't want that. And then we can try on something else and what we do want and come closer and closer to stating what we want, saying what we want, and experiencing what we want. That's what I see. That's my definition of being present. I can't hear you. You're breaking up.
I haven't said anything.
Say that again.
Hello?
I'm here. Oh,
I was listening to you. I haven't responded to what you just said.
Okay.
Yeah. I just,
okay.
I've been listening. I have not responded.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. And it's I realize, you know, we're doing a book study. So we're studying what Eckhart says, not what Moata says.
Right.
And so I respect that.
Oh,
and,
well, it's the same
know,
difference.
And,
to me,
It is. We are of the same cloth, and
exactly.
We're describing. And I think that what I've read about him is eventually everything I'm saying he gets to it. And so, because we're talking about a particular passage, I'm tying all the stuff to it in my
mm-hmm.
conversation. But he's in a book, so he does it in a more, you know, later on. He's probably going to go into some of these things. But I think that gratitude for the thing that I've created that I say I don't want. I'm grateful that I have the ability to even create this thing that I say I don't want because it means I can create. And so the fact that I created this thing that I say I don't want means I can create something that I do want because if I can create, I can create what I want or I can't create, you know. And so the fact that I have this thing means I do have the power to create something. And so it's just about focusing more about and being present with what it is that I say I want as opposed to what I don't want. But when we're convinced that we can't have what we want in life, and a lot of us get convinced of that, especially early childhood, you know, when we want so many things that we don't get, then it's easy to, when we start looking for, and the scripture says you have not because you ask not, and when you ask amiss, meaning you don't really know how to even ask knowing that you already have it, then that's why we really don't have anything or the thing that we say we desire. So I'm just learning to, at this stage of my training and development, I'm just learning to be grateful for all things because I know all things are aspects of the one. And when I can find good anywhere, I can find good everywhere. When I can find, you know, peace and happiness anywhere, I can find it everywhere. And so even the thing that I say I don't want, you know, I didn't want that guy, you know, in my face that day talking all that. I hate people talking stupid to me, you know, but here I am, you know, being taken to the deep end of the pool in a conversation with a guy who's hell-bent on talking stupid to me. But I found a piece of myself underneath what he was bringing that was deeper than that I found peace in. And so, you know, that's what I'm looking to do in every circumstance. And so, you know, the gratitude piece is not being talked about right now, and I'm just assuming that he's going to talk about it later on and tie that all together. But, you know, when you begin and end everything in gratitude, well, there's nowhere else to go but gratitude, and gratitude is the act of actually having that which you desire. And so what I desire is the ability to create the life I choose. The fact that I'm in the creation mode means I'm on the way of doing that. So I'm not rejecting anything. I'm affirming the truth of everything.
Yeah, that's great. I love that, and it really also touches on what occurs up in the next section, which is compassion. You know,
yes.
You know, you have to know yourself.
You do. You really do.
You have. It says on page 162, even though compassion starts on 161 in the hardcover, he says, you know, you are in touch with your own depth, which remains absolutely still. You don't resist change by mentally clinging to the equation. Your inner peace does not depend on it. You abide in being. unchanging, timeless, and deathless. You are no longer dependent for fulfillment or happiness on the outer world of constantly fluctuating form. It's like when, so like you're saying, when you're aware of who you are and things can go on outside of you or in your face, you can be peaceful and still within, knowing the truth of who you are and actually the truth of all of life. And when I think we are in that mode, in that present way of thinking and believing, you know, then we are absolutely practicing compassion, because we are seeing the oneness. We're seeing how we are all interrelated. And the peace that is within me is the peace that is most certainly within you and each and every one, or that potential.
And he's also talking about, as you continue reading the last couple of sentences there, he said you can enjoy them, talking about forms, you can play with them, you can create new forms, you can appreciate the beauty of it all, but there's no need to attach yourself to any of it. And that's the Buddhist teaching about non-attachment, that we have these things and we can play with them, but we are not to be attached to them. And that's where the suffering and the negativity and all that comes in, because we are attached to what the form was, rather than being present with letting that go, be not attached to it, and then create a new form that we can play with, because it's all about playing with the forms. I mean, we're like kids in a room full of Legos, you know, create it. And then when you finish playing with that one, create another one. And you finish playing with that one, create another one. And we create these things, and then we attach ourselves to it, and we don't want to let it go. And life is about the give and the take, the flow, the in and the outs, the night and the dark, the ups and the downs. And we can flow through all of that and not be attached to any of it, because it's going to come. And the Bible says, and it came to pass. Everything comes to pass. It comes to pass, and everything is going to pass. So it comes, we enjoy it, and then it passes. And the next thing comes, and we enjoy it, and then it passes. And how many different lifetimes have you lived in this life, and how many things in your life has come and passed on, and it continues to flow in that coming and that passing, that ebb and that flow of the ocean? That's how
it passes. It passes as long as you're willing to get past it and let it go. Because the quote-unquote negative experience comes into our life, it happens, and it passes the same way. But if we hold on to the memory of it and how bad it was and how awful it was and what a victim we were and how unfair it was, then we relive it over and over again, and it really doesn't pass. Because we're living in the past. You know, it doesn't, it never, we don't get past it.
It could be how good it was. You know, that's all as well, not letting go of the former good. It's like, well, I don't think it's ever going to get as good as that. I'm going to hold on to that good, you know, and we keep trying to. That's what happens to a lot of people in to addicts, alcoholics, people, you know, people who are in the mire of substance abuse. They're always chasing the one that gave him that moment of euphoria, whether it was a drug or maybe it was sex or whatever it was that tickled their brain in such a way that they felt it would never get as good as that again. They keep chasing that feeling, keep chasing that idea, and they're not letting it go. You know, and that's the biggest struggle. It's like, wow, you know.
I had a similar experience when I was a principal. There was this teacher who left the school, and I was kind of devastated because she was the best teacher that I had had, and she was able to work with difficult kids, and you just named the ideal teacher. To me, she was that person. And so I did my treatment on that. I'm like, okay, so she's leaving. I can't hold on to her. My next and highest good, I want to have an even better teacher, which I didn't think it could get much better myself personally. But I got a better teacher. And I was just elated. And I'm like, thank you, Spirit. Just see how that works. I got better than what the good I thought I could have. It was even better. So I had to let it go because she was going, and I did a spiritual mind treatment around it, and I got a better teacher. It was just amazing. So I got something left that was good, and I got better.
So the treatment was really for you to be able to release the good that you had and make way for a greater good to evolve. Is that what
exactly.
You're saying?
Exactly.
Which is exactly the point that I've been making the whole time about having something negative. Letting go of the good that we have for the greater good that we come to expect. You know, as we've been talking about this, you know, I think in pictures, and I had a metaphor, that my job is 43 or my home is 43 miles away, and I start towards my job or my home, and I'm in my first mile, I haven't manifested being at home yet. Now, I can curse the fact that I'm not at home. I can make the fact that I am where I am the fault of somebody else, you know, and some outside agency, and I can piss and moan and scream about how awful it is that I'm not home yet, okay? This is not where I want to be. Every mile, every foot, every inch, I can cry that this is not what I want to, where I want to be. Or I can affirm that every mile and every inch, you know, I'm closer to the goal. I'm reminded of when I first began my career working, and I got a sales job, and I sucked at sales. That was horrible. I have issues with rejection. I had no idea. And so, you know, I don't like to be told no over and over again. But I figured it out when I became a little older and I started going to the nightclub, and I started getting turned down to dances. You know, it's like after two or three people said no, I was ready to go home, you know. And it got so bad that I would only ask two people. If two people said no, I wouldn't ask anybody else the rest of the night because I wasn't going to get told three. No. Anyway, that's my issue, a side story. The point I'm making is that I got distracted by that. Just if you're not where you want to be, then you focus on where you want to be, you know, and just be grateful for where you are. And just, you know, that's what it was. So finally I met a guy who was really good at sales, and I told him about my experience. He said, well, nobody told you the secret. I said, what's that? He said, it's like 10 no's for every yes. I said, what? He said, yeah. So every time somebody tells me no, I just say that's one. And I know I'm closer to number 10 where I'm finally going to get a yes. He said, you're expecting to get a yes every single time, and therefore you were impatient when you didn't get it. He said, well, if they'd have let you know in the beginning that you were going to have rejection and to expect that, you've been ready for it. And he's right. And so I think, you know, in consciousness work, you know, you may not start out manifesting the highest and the best that you think you should have right away. But that doesn't mean you curse what you do have or start saying there's something wrong with what's going on and what you are manifesting. You just, you know, are grateful that I'm closer to it because I'm still working on manifesting it. I haven't given up the idea that I can have this, that I am this. I'm continuing to put my energy into it. And this is one of the forms that I'm manifesting. I mean, I don't know how many paintings of Mona Lisa got thrown in the trash, you know what I'm saying, before he got the right one. Or how many times he had to go over to redo it or paint over, you know, before we got, you know, David. Maybe David was, you know, more endowed originally. I don't know. Maybe that was a, oops, okay. I'm just saying. We have to, at some point, you have to be great. You have to be happy with the form we have and say, this is compatible, at least in sync with who I am, and really mean that. And if we don't practice being grateful for small things, how can we be grateful for big things? And so everything well, you know, I'm just going to be grateful for it. But if you can't be grateful for all the steps that built up to you having that thing and everything it took to make that thing, then there's a level of gratitude that you do not have, which is going to affect your ability to manifest the next thing.
Yeah.
That is so true.
And it is, you know, and again, you know, I keep pointing to the compassion part, you know, so we can probably get into that just a little bit. But, you know, he mentions there's two sides of compassion, but we have to be able to embrace, like, you know, embrace, like you said, Reverend Wanta, the so-called negativity. It's like, it's okay, it's one less mile that I have to go.
Yes.
You know, or instead of saying it's a mile more that I'm not there yet. You know, it's like, okay,
yeah.
You know, it's different, totally different way of looking at it. And we feel different.
We're like kids in the back seat going, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet?
Right. Instead of saying, hey, I'm almost there. I'm closer now.
Yeah,
you
it takes forever to get there when you're doing that.
It does. I drove across the country in 2005 from Seattle to Houston to New York. And I had a map. And on the map, it tells you how many miles from this city to that city and the markers on the highway. And so my game was to count the markers and to count the miles because I was closer. I drove a total of 10,000 miles round trip. And so I was, say, the first I would drive like 8 to 10 hours a day. And so that was another 300 or 400 miles less that I had to go. And so it was just like, okay, I would look to see what my progress was. How far had I come?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then I would make, you know, a determination of the next day, how much further can I go? And I just played this game with myself of counting down the miles from one destination to the other. And it was just like at the end of the day, it was like, yay, I made 383 miles today. Or I made 450 miles today. And it was just a marvelous, marvelous experience of driving across country and counting down those miles. And my granddaughter, it was so funny, because she wanted to count the state. She says, how long is it going to be before we get to the next state? And we were counting the states, and we were counting the cities, and we were talking about what was happening when we were passing the different cities in terms of history and stuff. We just made a big game out of it. So it wasn't a dreadful, oh, how long is it going to take us to get there? It was the adventure along the way. It was a great experience.
And so it is with life. There it is, right there.
Everybody's
the adventure.
So, we have about 12 minutes left. And, Rodney, I'd like to talk a little bit more about compassion, what you were talking about. He says, compassion is the awareness of a deep bond between yourself and all creatures. But there are two sides of compassion, two sides to this bond. On one hand, since you're still here in the physical body, you share the vulnerability and the mortality of your physical form with every other human being and every other living thing. Next time you say, I have nothing in common with this person, remember, you have a great deal in common. A few years from now, 2 years from now, or several years, it won't make much difference. Both of you will become rotting corpses, then piles of dust, then nothing at all. This is a sobering and humbling realization that leaves little room for pride. Is this a negative thought? No, it's a fact. So why close yourself to it? In this sense, there is total equality between you and every other creature. That's one side of it, looking at the form, because the form comes to pass. We will all pass. And then he talks about the other side of it. And the other side is that we are eternal beings, that we have this deathless dimension. Our true nature is the other side of compassion. On a deep feeling level, you now recognize not only your own immortality but that of every other creature as well. On the level of form, you are mortal and precarious. On the level of being, you are eternal, radiant light. These are the two aspects of compassion.
Mm-hmm. No place for ego there.
You know, I don't know if it's in the Bible or whatever, but I remember coming up with the saying, except by the grace of God, there go I. When something would happen to somebody, that we would like, oh, that poor person, or oh, that poor this, or, you know, judging people, they were saying, except by the grace of God, there go I, recognizing that oneness. I didn't understand what it meant when I was a kid, but I remember that being one of the talks, one of the sayings that the adults would say when somebody would talk about somebody else. It's like, except by the grace of God, there go I. You know, and so we're all subject to all of this stuff. It's just a matter of where our consciousness is and how we arise above it. And so what he's saying here is to recognize our humanness, means our form, but also at the same time recognize that we are at the same time eternal beings, and that we have this eternal life, and that we are these radiant, life-giving creatures. And these are the two aspects of compassion. And that is true for myself, for you guys, and for every other of the 7 billion plus people on the planet.
I think when you incorporate the idea that I'm a spiritual being, that this spiritual being is projecting form into a three-dimensional reality, and I'm agreeing with him that, you know, if I'm going to isolate form and three-dimensional reality and think that it operates outside of a spiritual directive or imperative, then, yeah, there's two kinds of compassion. But when I go back to a place of my inherent wholeness where I'm one with everything, I think the thing that brings me close on the quote-unquote mortal coil, the physical thing that we have in common and the spiritual thing we have in common, is the same thing. And, you know, I don't have a problem with them saying there's two kinds, but the bottom line to me, compassion is the indistinguishability of the self in others, so that I'm compassionate because I can see myself as the other person. I think, you know, your expression, "there before the grace of God go I," can be expanded to say, "there by the grace of God I am." So instead of thinking that it's only the grace of God that keeps me separate from that person, it's realizing, no, actually, it's because of the grace of God, that thing that makes everything one, the power behind all things, that I am also present there. And that the reason why we respond compassionately is because we have an inherent sense of connection or oneness with the thing we're responding to, which is why different charities get different things from different people, because we bond and feel more closer to or compatible with different causes and different things. But it's always a sense of connection or wholeness with a thing that causes us to have compassion with it. And I think all of life, you know, when lived from a place of compassion, is that's the unifying factor of humanity, is our ability to be compassionate with one another. And they actually have something now called the compassionate gene that debunks with the guy that did Origin of the Species, Darwin's Origin of the Species, Survival of the Fittest. And it says,
right,
human beings didn't survive because of the fittest. We survive because we learn to cooperate with one another, and it's our
right
ability to be compassionate with one another that makes us strong.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. And I was reading about Darwin and that theory, and it said that that was just one of the things that he talked about was the competitiveness. But he also concluded the exact same thing that you did, that it was the cooperative nature of man that was enabled man to progress, not the competitive one. But they didn't take that part of his theory. It was the
I think that happens in nature in general. You know, the creatures work in harmony with each other. You know, whether they're the same species or the other. You know, it's like an animal will never eat more. It won't destroy all of its dinner. You know, it won't eat up all of its prey. You know, it's just it everything works in tandem. It works in harmony. And I'm not going to say that that's compassion, but what I am saying is that there is maybe it's instinct. Maybe it's a level of consciousness that other forms of life have that we may not be aware of, but that has us all operating on the planet in harmony with each other, which is what we might call compassion, might call cooperative, you know, passion for life,
uh-huh,
you know, for existence, for a continued existence. Now, we certainly are not practicing compassion when we're warring and killing each other off. You know, that's not compassionate. So there's something to be said for, you know, that consciousness of oneness that has us cooperating with each other and doing things that are supportive of our environment. I do know it's getting close to the time to close.
We have about 4 minutes left.
Right. So I just want to thank everybody for being on the show, and thank you for having me on the show. So good to have you back, Reverend Mawatsis.
Good to be back.
From the San Francisco area, from the... Tell us the name of your church again and your
role. San Francisco Center for Spiritual Living, 280 Claremont Boulevard, San Francisco, California, 94129. And we're at sfcsl.org online, and you can get us at Facebook at SFCS, San Francisco Center for Spiritual Living.
And it most certainly is a loving place.
Yes.
And experience.
Thank you. Thank you. We strive to be, you know, we call ourselves the lovingest place on the planet, not because we're more loving than anybody else, but because we're being as absolutely loving as we can, and we always know that's sufficient, and so nobody's more loving than us.
Fantastic. Yes, it is.
It's really great hearing your voice again, Audra, and having a conversation with you. It's been very stimulating, and I've enjoyed it immensely. Or should I say
always,
that's Reverend Audra. That's Reverend Audra to you.
Now, Audra, you'll close it out.
Sorry, say that again.
Love Center.
I was going to say, yes, Reverend Rodney and I are from One Love Center. We meet every first and third Sunday at 11:30 a.m. at the Village at Garay J. That's 886 Pacific Street in Brooklyn, New York. And you can contact us at onelove@onelovecenter.org. And our phone number is, Rodney, give them
the number is 917-755-1418.
And
the number
we have
again.
90 seconds left. So I'm going to play How Do You View You? And good night.
You might want to pick another song. That doesn't play so well.
Oh, really? Okay. Have a talk with God?
Yes.
It's gonna... Okay. Okay, you guys...
And having a wonderful talk with God, talking with the two of you. I know God.
Okay. We're done.
I know that everybody listening, blessing each and everyone that participates, for the listening, for the sharing, but One Love Center presents.
Your life too far. Just go have a talk. with God.